There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
The Supreme Court has upheld the president's right to enact this travel ban. Remember, this was a travel ban in its third iteration now. It bans travel for certain classes of people from several different countries. And this was a hotly contested issue within the administration. Also, hotly contested issue at oral arguments just 2 months ago.
We are a stronger nation because of the histories of Irish Americans, Eastern European Americans, so many different bloodlines in this country that have all formed the fabric of who we are. And I just feel like this president's assaulting that day after day with this rhetoric and with his policy actions.
This is not a Muslim ban. It's not anything that President Obama didn't do when he was president. So I'm not surprised the Supreme Court ruled the way they did.
But
I think he was trying to keep the country safe.
Not exactly. Some people can. Sorry, Neil. 1207 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. And a lot to talk about as a big day for the Supreme Court as they're wrapping up their Supreme Court season is wrapping up. And a couple big decisions today that have a lot of people talking, a lot going on here. And when we get an issue like this and we want to talk about SCOTUS, we also want to talk about the questions in front of the highest court in the land. We check in with Brendan Kirby from LifeSet.com, Yellowhammer News, author of Wicked Mobile, and not only data miner, but pretty darn handy with the history of the Supreme Court and the current goings-on, and that's a technical term of SCOTUS. Hey, Brendan.
Hey, Dustin Hoffman, Neil Diamond. I love it.
That's right, because they're not coming to America. Well, some, but not all. This is, I guess, hit the rewind button for us for a second. And by the way, too, welcome to Midday Mobile, y'all. Hey, I'm Sean. Phone number, text line, 343-0106. I know a lot of people have been already texting in. Y'all can keep those messages coming. Questions for Brendan. So let's hit the rewind button far enough to go back to the third iteration of the travel ban. And what was the question? Number one, what was the ban? And number two, what was the question in front of the Supreme Court?
Right. Well, this started all the way back in February, I believe it was, of 2017. So right after President Trump took office and he issued the infamous travel ban, which was a temporary halt in the admission of refugees and in travelers from seven countries that were majority Muslim and plagued by terrorism or internal strife. This has gone through several iterations. And the most recent iteration added some countries. It added groups of people from Venezuela and North Korea, which obviously are not majority Muslim, and Chad. The African nation of Chad was on the list for a while, but then they later dropped that off. So that's what we're talking about.
Okay, and the idea here would be, just to pick out one, for example, and talk about Syria, that we talked about many times. The idea is, if there is somebody coming in and they're bringing documentation, or we're calling to check documentation back in the country of origin, that we can't trust the information coming from this case from Damascus. Is that essentially what we're talking about?
Right, exactly. The rationale behind this was, we have no way to scrutinize, or in the term du jour that's popular, vet. We can't vet people coming from countries that are either openly hostile to the United States and won't cooperate in that process, or they don't have functional governments. Somalia is a good example, is on the list. The government such as it exists in Somalia is technically a U.S. ally, but they don't control most of the country. It's not a functioning government. It's a failed state. And we've got no way to know, you know, who's coming, whether they're a security risk, whether they're a terrorist, that sort of thing. That's the rationale.
Okay, so there's the main question. The side story, and I want you to comment on this as well, is that all those things and the constitutionality of this ban be damned, because President Trump said anti-Muslim and racist things while on the campaign trail or stumping out there somewhere, that would I don't know how that changes, whatever you believe there, how that changes whether something's constitutional or not.
Well, this is a big debate in the courts, and a lot of the lower courts and the minority opinion in the Supreme Court case said we don't have to just look at the four corners, as they call it, the four corners of the document. We can look at how this document was produced. We can look at tweets from the president, campaign statements from the president, statements from his advisors, and from that we can discern that all this is just window dressing and that this is really just a Muslim ban. And that's what they operated on. Now, of course, technically speaking, this isn't a Muslim ban, or if it is, it's not a very effective one, since most of the world's Muslims are not affected by it, and you can make a rational basis for it. However, I'll say that when you campaign on a platform of a total shutdown of Muslims from entering the United States, as President Trump famously declared on the campaign trail in 2015, you're going to leave yourself open to charges that this is just a pretext and it's really a Muslim ban.
Okay, but... And I would be, you know, I'm probably going to be in no one's court on this, because I think you go back through the things the president said, and yeah, you know, it doesn't. You don't have to read too far into it to read his words saying that. But does that change the constitutionality? I mean, I think does the words of the president influence? I mean, to me, it seems like they are separate things. You have what the president's saying, but you also have, is this constitutional or not? That was the job of the Supreme Court, correct?
Right.
It's not to do an opinion poll.
The four minority justices on the court, their view is that this is unconstitutional, at least in large part because of what Trump said, and another president who issued the same ruling, it might pass constitutional muster. Now, that might seem strange, and you know, I think that there's a good argument that it is strange. However, in other contexts, they do this. You know, all we have to do is look back to the recent decision in that Masterpiece Cake Shop decision, where they ruled that the baker's rights were abrogated by the fact finder in that case, the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, because they didn't give him a fair shake. It wasn't a fair hearing because they were biased against his religion. And to demonstrate that, the justices, what did? They looked at statements made by the members of the commission. And that was actually cited by the minority opinion written by Justice Stephen Breyer today. He cited that case. But, you know, it's other cases they've done this as well. You think of a racial discrimination case. You can have a case where a hiring decision, say, you make at the radio station, which is perfectly defensible and legal in certain circumstances, if by your statements... If you made a lot of racist statements and such, they could a court could construe that as this facially neutral policy you have is really just a pretext to carry out your discriminatory intent, and we know that from things you said. So the courts do this in certain circumstances. In this context, it's usually they don't, and the court chose not to today, the majority anyway.
It does seem like a strange that the words of a person, you know, for better or worse, would change whether something is legal or not.
Right.
I find that, I mean, in the Colorado case, there'll be a lot of people celebrate that and say, yeah, right on, good for the baker. But and then in the case of the third iteration of the travel ban, they don't like it. On both sides, I don't like it. Either something is constitutional or it's not, and the whims and fancies of human beings shouldn't play into it.
Well, I mean, again, think of it in an employment category. You know, if a company fired a black employee, and you know, that is not illegal on its face, and the company might say he wasn't a good employee, that's why we fired him. But if he sues and says this, you know, you fired me because I'm black, and he has evidence, emails or other conversations that managers had about how they don't like black people are lazy, you know, whatever they want to say, that will be evidence, and a court could construe from that, or a jury, if it gets to a jury, could construe, you know, this this reason that you stated that otherwise would be legal is not legal because it's just a pretext. It's not a real...
Then go after the thing that they would say was pretext. You know what I'm saying? Instead of changing the law, go after the fact that they were discriminating.
Right, and that's what they're arguing. They're arguing that Trump is discriminating against Muslims based on their religion with this order, and it's dressed up in neutral language as a pretext to hide that. Now, the other problem with this, and Justice Thomas wrote a concurring opinion to point out that he doesn't think that the plaintiffs even have standing to bring this case because it's directed, these First Amendment claims are directed at foreigners who have never been to the United States and have no connection to the United States, and therefore the First Amendment doesn't even apply to them, even if it were a Muslim ban.
Yeah, I heard I think it was Dershowitz or somebody earlier today saying, I disagree with the tenor of this. I think this is bad policy. This doesn't serve the United States well, but it's constitutional. That kind of opinion, I think, is interesting because it's so rare in our very partisan world where he says, man, I don't like this at all. But,
right, especially in a court context, we should hear that more because having an outcome-based outlook on the court, I think, is very dangerous because then we decide the decision that we want, and then we figure out how to get there. And I think judges, too often on both sides do this, and I don't think it's good for justice because, that's a function of a legislature. A legislature decides the outcome he wants and then tries to pass a law or affect policy. Judges are supposed to be neutral umpires, and they're just supposed to rule them in or out based on the law, not their personal belief. And it's, occasionally I've read opinions by Justice Thomas where he'll explicitly say that. He'll say, one case is years ago when the Supreme Court struck down Texas's ban on sodomy. He dissented from that case and said he thinks it's a silly law, and if he were a member of the Texas legislature, he'd vote against it, but he thinks that the state was within its right to criminalize that behavior. We don't see that much, too many people are always focused on the outcome and the result and not on the process and the law.
All right, coming right back, more with Brendan Kirby right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1221 FM Talk 106.5. By the way, coming up next hour, we're talking about proposal today, the support from a packed house with University of South Alabama students and alum and I'm sure teachers and all that and people backing this push for $10 million from the city of Mobile, $10 million from Mobile County to go to the USA Stadium idea. We'll talk about that next hour at length. Also, that's our online opinion poll question brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Should the city of Mobile and Mobile County contribute $10 million each to the USA Football Stadium project? Vote online, front page of fmtalk1065.com. All right, continuing our conversation with Brendan Kirby with LifeZet, Yellowhammer News, author of Wicked Mobile, and talking about a big day for the top court in the land. And let's just wrap a little bit here on the support today, the 5-4 for the constitutionality of the, Travel Ban 3.0, right?
Travel Ban 3.0, right. The bottom line is the justices ruled 5-4 that the travel ban can go into effect. And it's really based on the clear language of the Immigration and Nationality Act of 1952, which explicitly gives this power to the president to decide which aliens to admit and which ones to exclude. Other presidents have used this plenty of times on a more limited basis, and they say, look, this is what the law says. This is a plain reading of the law, says the president has this power. So if you don't like this, the way Trump has applied it, elect a different president or elect a different Congress that will change the law.
All right. Another ruling today that has people talking, that another First Amendment case as well. This California law requiring pregnancy centers to advertise for abortion. Explain this for people who have not been following it.
Yeah, this is an interesting case. California passed a law that required pregnancy crisis centers, that are these pro-life pregnancy crisis centers, to post information in their clinics about abortion. So these are pro-life organizations that try to counsel women to not have abortions. You know, they help them out with diapers and parenting classes and that sort of thing, but they try to steer them to keeping the baby. And California said, you know, we don't like that. These sham organizations are providing misinformation to women, and women need to know their right to abortion. So they required that these clinics post signs in their clinics telling women that they have the right to a free or low-cost abortion, and posting the phone number where they can call to go get one. And these clinics said, well, wait a minute, you can't make us do that. That's this is against their core mission.
Right.
This is a free speech issue. And California said, oh, no, this isn't a free speech issue. This is just a regulation. It doesn't require you to say anything. So that is the issue. And the justices, again, another 5-4 ruling, they decided that, no, this is a free speech issue, because in our country, the First Amendment guarantees not only your right to speak, but to not speak, and what to say when you do speak. And they said by requiring these organizations to deliver this specific content-based message, you are compelling people to speak against their views, and that's a violation of the First Amendment. So that was the ruling. The dissenters said, there's all kinds of circumstances where the government requires information to be provided. Securities and Exchange Commission requires companies to disclose certain information about their businesses to investors. And even in the abortion context, in some states, they've passed regulations where abortion clinics have to provide certain kinds of information. Doctors have to tell patients about the risks of certain procedures. And they argue this is the same thing. And, you know, based on this ruling, if it's applied broadly, all those laws could be, at risk. And so that's kind of the tension and the debate over this. The majority ruled today that, you know, those are different. Saying that you have to provide information to investors is not the same thing as dictating a specific message that you have to deliver to women trying to get, telling them that they could have an abortion.
Okay, so the precedent set here will, I mean, you mentioned it just briefly there, but how does that shake out across states? I mean, how much control of this is in state hands, and how much will be overrided by supremacy?
Well, there are other states that have passed similar laws. They will be at risk. And I should point out, by the way, this was not a final ruling on the merits. This has to do with whether the court should have granted the plaintiffs a preliminary injunction to block the law from taking effect. So that's what they did. The Ninth Circuit out in San Francisco said we're going to let the law take effect, and so that overturns that. Now, in order to reach that, the court has to rule on whether or not the plaintiffs are likely to win on the merits. So the fact that the Supreme Court has ruled that this injunction must be put in place means that it's very likely that that the plaintiffs are also going to win on the merits. Other laws like this will be at risk. And possibly, I can see a wave of litigation from abortion rights supporters challenging some of these state laws that go the other way, that require women seeking abortion to be told certain things and given certain information. Those generally have been upheld, but I don't think they've been challenged specifically on First Amendment grounds. I think they've been challenged, under abortion grounds under Roe v. Wade. So slightly different issue. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, this could come back to haunt pro-life advocates if this comes back and the Supreme Court says, yeah, well, we're going to, to be consistent, you can't, it works both ways. So we'll see how that shakes out.
Yeah, a lot of people today, and I put myself in this list, thought that today was the last day of session for SCOTUS, but you said, in fact, not. They actually have a couple more rulings that we're waiting on.
Yeah, well, I'm basing this on the fact that they have not issued all their decisions, and typically, sometimes they will put something off, but they'll say, we're going to re-argue this case or delay it, but they haven't. Typically, they release these things on Mondays, but then you get to the last month of the term, and there's a lot of cases left, and they start adding days. So very likely tomorrow we'll get the last two cases. One is a big one nationwide that everyone has been looking at. It's a union dues case called Janus, and it's a union worker in Illinois, a public employee, who said, I don't want to pay the union because I don't agree with the union, and you're violating my rights by making me pay. Now, he doesn't have to pay the full dues if he's not a member, but he has to pay what's called an agency fee that basically pays for the cost of the collective bargaining activities that the union does, and they argue everyone has to pay this because everyone benefits from the negotiations, and we're going to separate that out from our political activities, so you're not actually supporting candidates that you don't like. His argument is, money's fungible. There's no way to really do that. I shouldn't have to pay. Now, this is very interesting. It could potentially have a big blow to unions' ability to raise money to support Democratic candidates, which is why, from a political standpoint, it's gained a lot of attention. And it's also going to be very interesting because there is Supreme Court precedent on the books where they have considered this very question before, and they've upheld the right of unions to collect this fee. So for the Supreme Court to rule in the plaintiff's favor, they would have to overturn a precedent, which is not unheard of, but is pretty unusual. They don't normally overturn precedents, so we'll see how they go.
And just about 45 seconds left here. One more that we'll probably talk about going forward because it may have some ramifications back here in the Yellowhammer State. A water rights case.
Water rights case, and long-time Alabama residents are probably familiar with the famous water wars between Florida, Alabama, and Georgia over control of the water that flows from Lake Lanier. Atlanta keeps growing, and they want more of that water, and Florida and Alabama have said, no, but you're taking too much water, and it's flowing down. So this has been litigated back and forth for decades, literally. This case involves just Florida versus Georgia, so Alabama is not in it, but could be impacted. And it's unusual in that it started in the Supreme Court. Almost always the Supreme Court is reviewing a lower court decision. But in this case, the parties said, please, Supreme Court, take this. And they did. They appointed a special master to hold a trial on this. And the special master recommended that Georgia should win. And that's what the Supreme Court is going to determine probably tomorrow, whether they accept that recommendation.
All right, Brendan, as always, we appreciate your time. People want to reach out to you. Twitter, the best place?
Twitter, at Brendan K. Kirby. You can always go to lightset.com as well.
All right, coming right back, more of Midday Mobile. President is speaking. We'll go to that in just a second.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:36, FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile on this Tuesday. Rob Holbert joins us next hour. We'll talk about the idea of the city and the county kicking in money. Mobile City, Mobile County kicking in money to the USA Jaguar Stadium, or whatever it will be called, the stadium to be built on the campus of the University of South Alabama. They've got a big story dropping tomorrow in Lanap about it. You're going to get a little advanced peek coming up in just a second with Rob. Also, speaking of that, and then I'll show these off here too in just a little bit, but I found, listen to this. You know how the show opens, right? Show opened with Gina Gregory. I've got some new, Dalton, you hadn't even heard these. I've got some new city council cuts to drop in. These are just the raw. These hadn't been processed. It's stuff like...
Please be patient with us. And again, no applause, no outcries, and we'll get through this and be able to discuss all the items on our agenda.
Okay, so that could be one of the possible new intro drops. Also, this one.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay.
All right. Again, good morning. Welcome to our regular scheduled meeting. The rules are quite simple. First of all, I ask that while you recognize that the council is working off electronic agenda, and some may be using those to follow along, electronic devices, we ask that you refrain from using those to communicate and turn off the ringers. At least put those on, all your phones on silent or vibrate so that...
What do you think? For the beginning of the show right there, just, when guests come in, we could...
And turn off the ringers. At least put those on, all your phones on silent or vibrate.
That's what it sounds like when you come in the studio with us here. I can tell you what, I'll save those for next hour. I've got some new clips. And we'll hear in a little bit, too, Mayor Sandy Simpson speak on support of this move. And we'll talk to Rob Holbert about it.
Because we were both working on finding cuts,
yes.
That might not be all. Maybe I can go ahead and tease that Councilman Fred Richardson gave a good 3-minute speech
on
being a graduate of the University of South Alabama. Alabama. Of course, he's from a small town called Nymph.
That's right.
Originally, but
Nymphomaniacs, yeah.
I think we might be able to find some cuts from that 3-minute speech that actually got a huge round of applause from the crowd when he was done.
Now I am intrigued.
Yes.
I have not cut up that part of the audio yet. Okay,
yeah, I'll have to get you to play that, and there's some good stuff in there, too, that we might be able to add into future show openings.
The show opening, the Midday Mobile show opening, is going to get to be, because you and I both get texts and emails all the time, I thought you were going to put such and such cut in and this and that, and Dalton and I both have folders inside the drives here where we drop these cuts. If we went with it like that now, the show opening would be about 16 minutes.
Yeah, which...
The first quarter hour of the program would be the opening, and then we'd come back.
Yeah, especially when you take in all the national... I mean, there's been great national news cuts, too. So we'll have to really, parse through those and find the best ones.
But you say I got something to look forward to?
Yeah, definitely some new contenders today from one city council meeting.
All right, very good. We will be playing those next hour and going forward. Let's get to this. A little bit in process here as President Trump reacting to the SCOTUS ruling.
Change it. It's so simple. It's called... Sorry, you can't come in. You have to go in through a legal process. You don't have to see a judge where the judge is going to take 3 years before you can come back. In the meantime, you never come back because you're already in the country. You're someplace in the country. And that would be bad, but it's really bad when it's a criminal. And we have plenty of them coming into the country this way. And they use the children. They use these young children for their own benefit. So we have to change the whole immigration picture. And we'll be able to do it. We need the border wall. We need the border. We need border security. And we need modern equipment. And we'll get it done. I have no doubt. Anybody else would like to say something? Anybody? Are we okay? We'll let these guys go out and have lunch.
John? On trade, there are some people who are saying that your tariff threats threaten to plunge the economy into a recession. Harley Davidson announced that it's moving a plant to Thailand. You've been very critical about that.
Harley Davidson was going to do that. They announced it early this year. So Harley Davidson is using that as an excuse. And I don't like that because I've been very good to Harley Davidson and they used it as an excuse. And I think the people that ride Harleys are not happy with Harley Davidson. And I wouldn't be either. But mostly companies are coming back to our country. I was the one that explained to Harley about 100% tax in India where they had a tariff of 100%. And I got it down to a much lower number. I think it's 50%, which is far too much. But they were paying 100% tariff. Now Prime Minister Modi brought it way down, but it's still way too high. No, I will say this, John. Other countries are negotiating. And without tariffs, you could never do that. And if they don't want to negotiate, then we'll do the tariffs. And just remember, we're the bank. We're the bank that everybody wants to steal from and plunder. And it can't be that way anymore. We lost $500 billion last year with China. We lost $151 billion with the European Union, which puts up trade barriers so that our farmers can't trade. We can't send farm products in for the most part. It's very hard to send cars in. We have countries where, as an example, India, they charge up as much as 100% tariff. We want the tariffs removed. What I would like to do and what I offered at the G7, you remember, I said, let's drop all tariffs and all barriers. Is everybody okay with that? And nobody said yes. I said, wait a minute, folks, you're complaining. No tariffs and no barriers. You're on your own. Let's do it. And it was like they couldn't leave the room fast enough.
And what do you say to people who say it's a risky business here, you could tip the economy into recession, and then what do you plan to do later this week?
We're so high up, we've picked up 40, if you look at the kind of numbers we picked up, it's up almost 40%. The market, and that's not the real market, is the overall, and the overall is up much more than that. But we picked up about $8 trillion in value doing what we're doing. Now, we've got a little bit of uncertainty because of trade. To me, there's no uncertainty, and to other people that happen to be smart, there's no uncertainty. But we can't allow the European Union to take out $151 billion out of the United States. We can't allow Mexico to have a NAFTA deal that gives them over $100 billion. And I call it profit. You know, you can divide that up any way you want to do it. I call it profit.
We can't allow Mexico to take $100 billion. We can't give China anywhere from 375 to 100 to 500. It's 375, some people, depending on your formula, $375 billion. It could be $504 billion. It's a tremendous amount of money being taken out of our economy. We have to straighten it out. Now, what's happening? We put steel tariffs on. Our steel industry is going through the roof. U.S. Steel just announced they're expanding or building 6 new facilities. Last night in South Carolina, right? Go ahead. Georgetown Steel. The factory's been closed. The plant's been closed. How long, Lindsay?
About 3 years. But what's interesting is a British company, a steel manufacturer in Britain, bought Georgetown Steel to make steel here.
Right. Solar panels. We put tariffs on solar panels, 30%. They were all being made in China. We had 32 different factories. Now they're starting to open again. Plants, new plants, because solar's pretty new technology. We had 32. We had two that were open. Everyone else was closed because of what happened and what came in from other places, in particular China. And now we have 7 that are opening, and many more considered. And the 2 that were dying, they were going to close, they're thriving right now. Washing machines that were being dumped all over the country. Not good ones, by the way. Ones that didn't work really well. And now they're opening up washing machines. We put a 30% tariff on. So tariffs could be a very positive thing. You know, in the old days when we had tariffs, we didn't have income tax. When people wanted to come in, you look at the days of McKinley and some others, when people wanted to come in, they had to pay a price. When they want to come in and raid our treasury, they had to pay a price. We didn't have income tax. You didn't need income tax. We didn't have debt. So we're doing this, I will say, in every instance, every country, any country that you can mention has been extremely nice. Less to the media probably, but extremely nice. They want to negotiate a deal. So, and we're open to that. We're open to that. But it's going to be very strong. We are putting on tariffs on certain industries. We can't lose our steel industry. Our steel industry was ready to go out of business. It was at the bottom. Our aluminum industry was ready to go out of business. Now the steel industry is thriving. Think of it, United States Steel, first time in 35 years, they're actually expanding. It's going up. They're building new places. Georgetown Steel closed for 3 or 4 years. They announced yesterday they're opening up their plant. It's been closed for 4 years, I think they said, in South Carolina. No, we're doing the right thing, 100%. And you know you have them on both sides. Some people agree, some people don't agree. The bottom line is countries are coming back now to negotiate, including European Union wants to negotiate. Because if they don't, we're going to tax their cars. They send Mercedes in. They send BMWs in. They pay almost no tax. When we send cars to the European Union, they charge us a tremendous tax. 5 times greater than what we charge them. But more importantly, they don't want our cars. They have a barrier. We don't want your cars. But if you do get it in, you're going to pay a tax. With China, if we send a car to China, they charge us a 25% tax. So we make a car, we send it to China, we want to compete. That's not free trade. That's stupid trade. So we send 25% tax. When they make a car in China and they send it here, we charge them 2.5%. Okay. So we get 2.5%, China gets 25%. That's not fair, that's not free, that's just stupid.
Mr. President, okay. What are you looking at
in terms of Chinese investment restrictions? I think you've got an announcement.
Well, it's not just Chinese. It's we don't want people coming in. Hey, look, we are a very smart country. We have the most incredible people in Silicon Valley. We don't want China and other countries. It's not necessarily or particular because they covered it incorrectly. They had either a leaker that didn't exist or a leaker that didn't know his business very well. But they gave it to Bloomberg and they gave it to, I believe, the Wall Street Journal. that it was either a bad leak by somebody that didn't know, but probably they just made up the story. There was no leak. I've been a long term. I'm not sure if my political friends would agree, but I think a lot of leaks aren't leaks. They're made up by the writers. They don't exist, the leak. But this was a leak that was just off. We want to have our jewels. Those are our great jewels. That's like United States Steel from 70 years ago. These companies.
All right, President, talking about the Supreme Court ruling, in addition to, of course, trade and tariffs and a litany of items up for the president today. All right, coming right back, talk a little more about what happened today with the Mobile County Commission, Mobile City Council, and whether the city and the county are going to get into spending taxpayer dollars to build a stadium on the USA campus. Get into that next.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, well, let's get to this. So this is Mobile Mayor Sandy Stimson speaking at the beginning of the city council meeting today about the stadium at the University of South Alabama, also talking about the airport as well. And coming up next hour, a few more clips from the event, plus Rob Holbert from Landyap. They're getting ready to drop a new Landyap out, has a big story about this. We'll get a little heads up in a second. All right, let's go to that. Here is Mobile Mayor Sandy Stimson.
Communications from the mayor.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I can only recall maybe one other occasion when we had almost this many people in here and they didn't all have on JAG shirts. So welcome. We're delighted to see you here. Now, my first remarks have to do with the stadium, not realizing that this many people would be showing up and the conversation that would occur at the county commission meeting, but I would have chosen, had I known it, to speak to the county commissioners because there were several questions that were raised, some doubts that were cast, and I think that having given the opportunity, we could have put those to bed. Simply put, one way to frame this is there is a $100 million challenge that the city and the county have. And when I say that is that if we have to build a new stadium to replace LAD, the estimate would be, let's say, $100 million. So one way of looking at this is that the University of South Alabama has made us a proposition. They would like to build a stadium. They're only asking us, now this stadium will be for our benefit also. So instead of the city and the county having to come up with $100 million at some point in the future, because I would pause and ask you, how many 70-year-old stadiums do you know of? So in the time frames that we're talking about as we compare cost, happen to be over the next 20 years. So the following question would be, how many 90-year-old stadiums do you know about in the United States? At some point, stadiums outlive their useful life. And so for us to replace LAD, if it's $100 million, you are offering us the best proposition that we're probably going to get, and that is South Alabama is going to contribute $60 million toward a new stadium to be used by our community. Other questions that were raised, well, I'm not satisfied with what's going to happen with the LAD property. Everybody knows that we have a dire need for more places for our youth to play. We will have a high school football stadium there. It will be able to be used not just by high schoolers, possibly middle schoolers, which does not go on at LAD Stadium. It could possibly even be used by youth sports. It would be a multi-purpose facility. Be able to play lacrosse, soccer, and football. So from a vibrancy standpoint and meeting the need of the community, it is a much better proposition for the city and the county to support rebuilding of the LAD facility. When I look at the short-term opportunity, now I spoke of the big one, the replacement cost, but if you just look in the short term of what it's going to cost to maintain LAD, over the next 20 years, it's estimated that we will have to spend upwards of $33 million during that period of time compared to the $10 million that we would contribute to the South Alabama Stadium. So at the end of the day, there are a lot of emotions revolved around this, and especially because of the history associated with LAD, but the city and the county only have so much money to spend. And so today, is the way I look at it as the mayor, that we can solve all the challenges that have been presented, put all the fears and the concerns and the question marks to bed. But we cannot afford to miss this opportunity because we do not have but so many dollars to spread throughout our community. So there'll be more conversation about this. We will have an ad hoc committee meeting conducted by the City Council this afternoon, at which time we'll share more information and we will answer their questions. But at next week's meeting, I plan to attend the County Commission meeting and tell them what the city's intentions are to make sure that we have addressed the needs of the community. And I felt like that you needed to know that before you left here, wondering where it stands. So I would say to the leadership of South, thank you for giving us this opportunity. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to partner. But also, once this is done, to say that we can, the use of LAD for the Senior Bowl, for the GoDaddy Bowl, or its subsequent follower, or the Gulf Coast Challenge, or the following bowl to that, it's not for the 20-year time period. They will be able to use the USA facility for as long as they exist as entities or there is an existing entity as a follow-on. So that touches, I think, just a couple of the topics that were addressed during the previous meeting. On a completely different subject, we last week found out the Mobile Airport Authority had revealed the findings of their feasibility study for relocating the airport to Brooklyn. There seems to be a lot of community-wide support for moving the airport to Brooklyn. The carriers seem to be more interested in that also. So there'll be a lot more conversation because the next step on the airport is for there to be a master plan which will show what it looks like on a built-out basis. Our hope in doing this is that we will have an opportunity to recapture a lot of the market share that we lost. My guess is that most of you, if you've been a passenger on an airplane, you have looked at the cost of the tickets in Pensacola, probably flown out of Pensacola because they have more direct flights and they have cheaper fares. The reason they have cheaper fares is that today they have 1 million more passengers flying out of Pensacola than Mobile does. In 1990, we were almost neck and neck. And so we have allowed Pensacola to take our market share, and subsequently they've gotten the cheaper fares and the more direct flights. So from a service standpoint of reaching out to the community and providing a better service for you and everybody in our community, we will be able to do it by relocating the airport. But I would also say, their comment has been made, and I've said it in these chambers before, is that comment was made, Mayor, there are a lot of people in Mobile that don't fly. And I certainly understand that, but I can tell you this, if you have 1 million more people flying out of Mobile, it will impact every citizen in this community through additional job growth and opportunity. Mr. Chairman.
All right, so there we go. So the scene. Just a couple hours ago, Mayor Sandy Stimson speaking about the reasons why it would be good for the city of Mobile to put money into a stadium at the University of South Alabama. We'll talk more about that next hour. Rob Holbert from Lanyap joins us. Lanyap has a story all about this from Jason Johnson. We'll get into it. Hour number two of Midday Mobile on the way next. Y'all stay close.